Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'll have you know that here in Atlanta, there is the threat a few hours from now of a light dusting of snow, possibly. And nonetheless, Dog Nation's crew has soldiered on bravely into Dog Nation World Headquarters today for our program. And I'm really excited about today's show. I feel like we've got a lot of really good stuff coming up on the program today. Later on, it's our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff Sintel. And as I was telling our video audience a moment ago, it's really time to start really drilling down significantly on how exactly Georgia's going to close out its 2019 class. We're going to do that in just a moment. I think these are important conversations to have. New details out there. And we'll let Jeff explain to us what it all means. Also coming up in just a moment, boy, I am really excited about a interview we were able to do last night with Trent Dilfer, the great quarterbacks coach, a part of the Elite 11, former Super Bowl winning quarterback himself, longtime NFL analyst. We just happened to bump into him last night as a part of the Super Bowl opening night festivities in downtown Atlanta, and we kind of got into an impromptu conversation on what the Georgia offense is going to look like this year and kind of where Jake Fromm needs to take his progression to the next level. That's going to be really good stuff coming up with Trent Dilfer in just a moment. An important look at the Georgia quarterback situation and the Georgia offense, and maybe a little bit about kind of what went wrong in 2018 in terms of the weird dynamic that existed for Georgia that position. That's going to be fantastic here in just a moment. Before that, though, we were obviously there last night, Super Bowl opening night, because of the presence, the large presence of so many former Georgia players on both these teams, really in starring roles. Later on in the week, we'll hear from Todd Gurley. We'll hear from Sony Michel. We had a really deep, fascinating conversation last night with one of the Patriots captains, David Boss Andrews, himself, another former UGA player. But the conversation I want to start with in terms of what we were able to be a part of last night came from, you know, former Georgia defensive star linebacker Ramique Wilson, who's doing some great work for the L.A. Rams now. And we had a chance to talk to him last night about kind of what it means and what it feels like to be back in the state of Georgia. Now, you're going to hear a lot of this kind of stuff this week. It's really a good week for Georgia as it gets ready to close that 2019 cycle to have the Super Bowl in its home state and have so many former dogs here in this state once again. And one of the things you're going to be very proud of hearing over and over again is the affection that these guys still have for UGA, including guys like Wilson, who didn't play for Kirby Smart, but still love the direction that Kirby Smart's taken that program. So let me set up this conversation now, and we'll kind of take it in a couple different directions here. Here is the former Georgia linebacker, Ramique Wilson, now part of the NFC champion Los Angeles Rams. You know, how does it feel to be back in Georgia? How does it feel to be representing your university back in that home state in Atlanta for the Super Bowl? This is a great conversation. Listen to what Ramique had to say about that.
It means a lot, and like I said, it's great to be here, see familiar faces, you know, Sony, Isaiah, David. It's great being here, seeing downtown Atlanta. It's great.
We talked to Ty Gurley earlier. He didn't want to talk too much about Sony Michel for this week anyway. Sony's an opponent instead of a brother and a teammate. You kind of feel the same way? What does it feel like to have Sony on the other side in this game?
It's great, and it shows what Georgia's all about. We send guys to the league, we send guys to the Super Bowl, to the playoffs, and that's big on the program.
Obviously, Georgia's changed a good bit since you were there. Kirby Smart's come in. How well have you gotten to know Kirby, and how impressed have you been with what he's done over the last 3 years at UGA?
Very impressed. He's got us competing for a national title each year, and he's doing a great job.
No doubt you love that commitment to defense, I'm sure, as well.
Oh, most definitely, yes.
There's a phrase, and mostly it's used in politics. It also applies here in this instance as well. It's called earned media. You know, sometimes politicians will pay for commercial ads. They'll pay to have their ads run during commercial breaks. But sometimes you do something that generates enough buzz that TV stations essentially give you media for free because they're talking about you without you having to pay for that. What Georgia is getting this week and what Georgia got right there from Ramique Wilson is a little bit of earned media. It's a little bit of a media conversation and a little bit of an advertisement that Georgia doesn't have to pay for. You know, if you drive around the city of Atlanta right now, you can see billboards for all kinds of colleges, even college football programs. You know, Clemson runs billboards in Georgia. You know, a lot of programs run, especially in this digital age now, they run those billboards on next to the highway in Georgia of, hey, take a look at our football program. But those are ads that you have to pay for, and a lot of times those are ads that can be easily ignored. But it's very difficult to ignore a former Georgia linebacker say that this is what Georgia's all about. The presence of former UGA players on that team, the New England Patriots, former UGA players on my team, the LA Rams. It shows you what Georgia's all about, putting guys in the league and putting guys in the Super Bowl. And that's certainly what Georgia fans want their program to be about, especially when you look at Kirby Smart trying to take UGA to the next level. Also, how interesting was it to hear Ramique Wilson say, you know what, I am really impressed with what Kirby Smart has done. And one of the things that so many former players have also told us is that Kirby's done a really good job with that outreach to former NFL guys, letting them know they're valued. If you go to, you know, any Georgia game, you know, the breaks in between play are almost always filled with, hey, let's welcome back to UGA, former UGA star who gets to come out there on the field, wave, and be congratulated. And that's always kind of a cool moment in the game, but it also serves to further the outreach that Kirby has with the former NFL guys, even the ones that he didn't coach. And by the way, in terms of Georgia being a pipeline to the NFL, it's not just shows like Dog Nation Daily who are noticing that. I thought that Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports had a really interesting tweet last night, having spent some time, like a lot of the gaggle of reporters did, with the New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick, who was actually asked about Kirby Smart. Now, you know the situation with Belichick. He's been a part of Georgia's, you know, pro days before. He's been a part of, you know, their coaching clinics before. I think he's coming back for a Georgia coaching clinic later on as well. This is a guy that has a relationship with Kirby Smart. So Belichick was asked about Kirby Smart. I think we have the text of what Belichick said. Wetzel writes, Bill Belichick, quote, sure to find its way to every Georgia football recruit. Here's the quote from Belichick. I think Kirby's program is excellent to prepare guys for the National Football League. Now, as Connor Riley wrote this morning in his Good Day UGA piece, Bill Belichick does not throw around compliments very easily. That's not the kind of thing that he just goes around doing. In fact, he's been asked to praise NFL players and flat out just chosen not to do it, just, you know, not giving them any credit whatsoever. That's not often what he chooses to do. If Belichick wants to praise Kirby Smart, it's because I believe that he truly believes what he's saying. And apparently he believes that Kirby Smart's going to be really good for Georgia in terms of getting guys to the NFL. We've already seen that from Smart in his brief tenure at UGA, and even before him, credit to Mark Richt for creating the kind of players that can also play in this year's Super Bowl too, because obviously his DNA and blueprints on that a bit. The overall bottom line here is, and we knew this coming into the week, and it's already turning out to be true, UGA is going to get a lot of attention. Got so last night at Super Bowl opening night. There'll be more media attention in the days ahead. People are noticing the obvious connection. Wow, there are a lot of former Georgia players in this game, and that speaks well to the brand that Georgia has built and the brand that Kirby Smart for UGA continues to build. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're glad to have you with us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and we are available in podcast form pretty much wherever you find podcasts, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We're really glad to have you with us today. I told you this yesterday. I want to make sure you're aware of this. And this is not the kind of news that I look forward to giving, but it is important that everybody be aware of it and know about it. We've had to postpone our Marlowe's Tavern event tonight at the Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw. This is one of those things that you kind of have to make the call on this at the beginning of the week in order to get all the word out, because, you know, it's not just the Dog Nation folks and the Dog Nation daily listeners and viewers who show up there. You got, you know, you got workers, you got, you know, a lot of things to consider, Marlowe's Tavern staff and Marlowe's Tavern, you know, customers, and you want to take good care of everybody. So we made the decision yesterday, looking at what the forecast appeared to be, that we're going to postpone the event scheduled for tonight at the Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw. Now, we're going to be at Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw. I promise you we're going to work ourselves to get back there at some point in time. We'll have an event there coming up pretty soon. We'll tell you more about that when we can. But for now, the need to know is that the Marlowe's Tavern event scheduled tonight for Kennesaw, Georgia, due to the issues of the weather. And as I look out the window right now, it's still kind of difficult to tell what the weather's going to end up being. But there is some prediction of some winter stuff in our area, especially that area up there. So we're going to let cooler heads prevail, and we'll postpone this tonight. We'll look forward to being back at a Marlowe's Tavern again very soon, and specifically at the Kennesaw location. We'll also, speaking of Marlowe's Tavern, get Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. A lot of really important information to get into with Jeff once he joins us. Before that, though, let's do our Around the Doghouse, here presented today by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. And, you know, last night we go to Atlanta because it's opening night for the Super Bowl. It's a chance to talk to the teams in the game and talk to the former UGA players. And as I said, we go hear from Gurley and Michelle and, you know, David Boss Andrews. You'll hear from all those guys this week on Dog Nation Daily. But there's this, you know, huge, you know, just gathering of media As we're kind of walking around, it was right there at the brand new State Farm Arena. As we're walking around there, we bump into Connor Ollie. Did a good job of pointing him out, spotting him. Trent Dilfer, you know Dilfer as the former Baltimore Ravens quarterback, led the team to a Super Bowl. He's worked at ESPN as an analyst. We kind of know him more around these parts, though, these days, as the guru of the Elite 11 quarterback camp. All the top five-star and very high four-star quarterbacks in the country, Dilfer knows those, you know, each and every year. And so he's got a lot of, you know, opinions when it comes to, you know, the top quarterbacks in college football, and a lot of those in recent years have at least made their way through the University of Georgia. So this was a great time for us to talk to Dilfer about the current state of the Georgia offense, and we're going to see more from Jake Fromm in 2019, and the possibility that he could be an early entrant into the 2020 draft, what he needs to do to make that happen, and where the next step for Jake Fromm needs to go. We also started our conversation with the way the things that just unfolded in 2018, the fact that Justin Fields came to Georgia, didn't earn enough playing time, and then therefore chose to depart Georgia. Was Trent Dilfer surprised in any way about how that played itself out? Here's what Dilfer had to say about that.
I was probably the only guy that wasn't surprised. I told Justin I didn't think it was a good move to go there. He's a unique talent, one of the best I've ever seen. But, I mean, these kids, they think that when they're in high school, they're just going to go in and beat out the stud that's ahead of them. And Jake's a great player. And Jake's a guy that not only is a great player, but he's a player that gets the most out of everybody, and people gravitate towards him. So the dual thing was never going to work, you know, having the two quarterbacks splitting time. And Jake, because of his command of the offense and the success he had as a freshman, to me, I just didn't think it was a good move. I kind of like what Justin's done now. These kids should have the ability to move and go develop as players.
We're in the early stages of the 2020 draft talk right now. Jake Fromm could obviously be potentially a first-round draft pick. Do you see that kind of progression in his future?
I think he needs to be a little more athletic at the position. He needs to improve in the pocket. He needs to improve his movement patterns. He's got the arm, he's got the brain, he's got the toughness, he's got the leadership. Needs to step it up a little bit athletically, and at that age you can still improve athletically. So we'll see what this next year has for him, but for me, my emphasis if I was coaching him would be show a little more dynamic qualities as an athlete.
Quick final question. Obviously you're watching every game, so you don't see every play of the Georgia, but what do you think the offense they put around him? It's obviously pretty heavy with the run. Is that the kind of offense that can get the best out of Jake Fromm's skill set right now?
I love what they do. They're one of the few teams that's kind of caved into this throw it every down mentality. It's good for the team. It's good for the players. It's the right way to win football games. Nick Saban's had a lot of success with that model for a long time. So, and they can do more. The one thing about having a Jake Fromm is if you do get behind in the game, you happen to turn over, play a little sloppy, he can throw you back into a game, and they have playmakers to do that.
Well, that was a really fascinating conversation with Trent Dilfer. And the thing I probably felt the most interesting about that is here's Dilfer, who is an unabashed, you know, advocate of quarterbacks. You know, he is the Elite 11 guru. He's the guy that knows all these recruits. He's the guy that works with them, develops them. I mean, his reputation in the football game now is really largely connected to his ability to bring up these quarterbacks, evaluate them, and kind of be a part of that conversation. So given his connection to the quarterback position, isn't it funny or interesting to hear him tout the brand of offense that Georgia's playing? This is a guy who speaks on behalf of quarterbacks saying the Georgia offense that some people have said, ooh, I'm not quite so sure that's the best offense to get wide receivers in the NFL, or ooh, I'm not quite so sure that's the best offense to do anything other than really make running backs appear to be bigger and better. That's a run-heavy offense. That's an offense that's more about, you know, the running backs and the offensive linemen. But here is the ultimate quarterback guru, you know, the guy connected to the Elite 11 quarterback camp, a friend to the Jake Fromms and the Justin Fields and the Jacob Eason's of the world, saying, I'm glad to see the Georgia offense not veer in the direction of these, you know, ultra pass happy deals. One can assume that he's referencing a lot of what we've seen in the Big 12 or what we've seen, you know, in the Pac-12 when he talks about that. So it almost sounds like he's saying that big offensive linemen, really good running backs, that can actually be a quarterback's best friend. And I do think that's going to be really interesting to see how that opinion evolves in 2019 with James Coley running the Georgia offense. Many of you have hoped, you've wished out loud that Coley would make some tweaks and some changes compared to what Jim Chaney was doing in 2016 and 2017 and 2018. We'll see where that goes. But this from Trent Dilfer, another example that the offense that Georgia's running is the kind of offense that ought to be able to fully develop quarterbacks. And we're seeing that development and that maturity take place for Jake Fromm. It ought to be the kind of showcase that, just like last night, was a big stage with a lot of former dogs in the highest levels of the NFL. The current Georgia offense provides that opportunity also. And it was really interesting to hear Trent Dilfer, guy that's won a Super Bowl as a quarterback and now develops quarterbacks and trains quarterbacks, saying some really good and positive things with the Georgia offense last night. It's Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let me remind you that Around the Doghouse here on Tuesday is brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, beautiful Towns County, Georgia. And on a week like this, I can only imagine how pretty Brasstown Valley is going to look. And really, any weekend or any week, it's a great chance for you to get away. I've been there. I've kind of curled up next to that crackling fire in the fireplace right there in the lobby. Delicious food in the restaurants, and really just a view that speaks for itself, that stretches seemingly for miles and miles and miles. Towns County is a beautiful part of the state of Georgia, and Brasstown Valley Resort's really among the crown jewels in that area. So you're going to want to check it out for yourself. Go to brasstownvalley.com. The website, once again, is brasstownvalley.com. You can find out about all the special offers and great chances for savings there at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. I cannot recommend this place highly enough. If you're looking for a getaway that really feels like you've gotten away, it really feels like you've gone somewhere special, you kind of, erase the hustle and bustle of normal life here around the Atlanta area for those of us who live here. The good news is it's not too far of a drive away, but it is certainly a world away in terms of how relaxed you're going to feel when you get there. You can also enjoy some great golf, too. It's BrasstownValley.com to find out more about Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. We'll have more reaction to what Trent Dilfer said in a moment. That's later on in our program. For now, though, there's news on Nick Cross. There's issues in terms of how Georgia might close out its 2019 class. The guy to know all of this and help us know it better is our buddy Jeff Sintel. Let's speak to him right now as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Jeff Sintel, hopefully braving the cold winter weather, or at least the threat of it, that may be coming at some point in time before the end of this Tuesday. But nonetheless, he is good enough to join us here by phone once again for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. And Jeff, I'll say good morning to you. And I guess let me start this way. And oftentimes I find myself saying some version of this, which is, when there's good news, you're the first one to give it to us. We appreciate that. When there's less than stellar news, you also give it to us unvarnished. And as a way of setting up this question, I'm going to show our video audience on the screen, Nick Cross, the four-star defensive back whom we have discussed in this segment before on Twitter, saying happy Valley this weekend, and a lion emoji along with a photo of himself wearing the unmistakable Penn State uniform. I guess this means the ship has sailed for one Nick Cross in UGA. If Georgia can't get him on campus for the final weekend, they're probably not signing him come National Signing Day. Is that fair to say?
For joining, thanks for getting a chance to join you today on Snow Nation Daily. I was waiting for you to make some comparison about the wintry mix and all the five stars in the current Florida recruiting class, but let's get on point here with your very important question about Nick Cross. Well, Nick Cross has been to Georgia. He's taken some unofficials to Georgia. He's been there for a game day. I think in his heart of hearts, when the in-home visits, and if he truly wants to go to Georgia, I think he's seen enough there to pull the trigger on Georgia. To me, this is just an example of there are other schools to think about here aside from Georgia. He's still committed to Florida State. He's still a part of that recruiting class, and looks like his last official visit is going to go to Penn State. So there's an itch there he needs to scratch with Penn State as well. Everybody wonders about the ideal close for Georgia's recruiting class. Will a graduate transfer in the portal change the way Georgia looks at the tight end spot? What's going on with a lot of guys? What's going on with Nick Cross? Has the George Pickens ship sailed? Like, part of that Hoover High School Buccaneer fleet. Lots of things to talk about, but I think it really comes front and center on two things. One, Kyrie Lam, that's the cornerback target. We speak on this show a lot, man, how Georgia needs to have four elite cornerbacks for that head-to-head every December with Alabama. Adding Kyrie Lam as maybe the final crown jewel of the 2019 recruiting class seems like the best possible close for the Bulldogs.
Okay, so you gave us a lot to chew on with there, so let me see if I can kind of decipher all of this. So if we cross off Nick Cross, no pun intended, Kyrie Lam, who it's worth pointing out, Jeff, I still hear from Florida people on Twitter every day who they think they are still in good shape for Elam, despite the fact that Georgia hires Charlton Warren and seemed to impress Elam on his official visit. You know, there's still some confidence coming from some Florida fans who like to troll me on Twitter. Maybe that doesn't mean anything, or maybe it does. You also mentioned the tight end deal. I guess there's also a chance, I know CBS Sports reported this, that Brett Scyther may also visit Penn State this weekend. You mentioned the possibility of a graduate transfer. I don't know if that's a, you can, you know, kind of fill in the gaps who that might be, the Virginia Tech guy or whomever. I mean, I would have thought that Scyther and Elam represent the most likely close for UGA. How much does that represent your wisdom also, and I guess conventional thinking on this right now?
Well, good stuff here. And you know, with always with Georgia, recruiting impacts future recruiting, which we talk about a lot. And with Scyther, yeah, he's talented. He's underrated. He just spent an official at Alabama after Georgia. Sounds like Penn State might get an unofficial this weekend. So things to think about there. But the graduate transfer portal, the transfer portal, which I'll say it aloud three times, sometimes it giveth and sometimes it taketh away. Might be a chance here with Eli Wolf out of Tennessee. Now, I'm not saying he's the best fit yet. You can just follow a few things. Number one, Todd Hartley is following him on Twitter. Number two, he has been a centerpiece guy for an SEC program. Our colleague Mike Griffith even reported yesterday on Dog Nation how Jeremy Pruitt brought Eli Wolf to SEC Media Days last year for the Volunteers. He's about 6'4", about 235, 240. Not as talented as Isaac Nauta per se, but think about this, because back to our original point, recruiting impacts other potential recruiting. So if Georgia signs up Brett Scyther, is that as cozy a fit 1 or 2 years down the line? And just getting this grad transfer from Tennessee, letting him basically be a vital cog in the depth chart for his senior season and his final season in Athens, and then voila, all of a sudden Georgia can pitch. No Charlie Warner, John Fitzpatrick now entering a redshirt sophomore season. Then you would have Rylan Godey as a sophomore. But then all of a sudden you can talk to five-star tight ends like the ones that used to be committed to Alabama. I mean, to Miami, Dominic Marinelli, like a young man by the name of Arik Gilbert, who is in the state of Georgia, a five-star. I think the leaner that 2020 tight end cupboard looks for the Georgia Bulldogs, the better served they are with getting not one, but maybe two elite tight ends for the class in 2020.
There's also, you know, some buzz out there looking ahead to, you know, this weekend when you talk about transfers, of the idea that a guy like Lawrence Cager, who was a Miami wide receiver, that he might be visiting Georgia. Jeff, and to me, this is a very interesting name because he's actually got some stats. You know, if I'm remembering correctly, he caught like 6 touchdown passes for Miami. That's a pretty legitimate stat line for a guy like this. I don't know how good of a player he is, but I haven't really watched him play a lot. But when I look at the stat line, it looks like the kind of guy that could potentially make a contribution to Georgia at the wide receiver position. So when you talk about transfers, I guess you also have to mention wide receiver in this here as well, don't you?
Yeah, we were laughing with one of our other colleagues in the industry a few days back ago about, you know, there's a need to be a team recruiting reporter now, which focuses on the high schools. There's a need to be a beat reporter that would cover the University of Georgia. And then there might be a transfer or a portal recruiting reporter to cover things for all these big-time schools. Because you mentioned Lawrence Cager. You talk about, you know, some of the big news that went across Twitter was Josh Ramadavebe. That's the 4-star receiver that came out of North Gwinnett that went out to USC, Southern California. He's been there 3 years. He's redshirted. He's only caught 2 balls in his 3 years, in his 3 seasons there at USC. But everybody starts seeing these names and remembering how talented they were as recruits and start thinking, plug and play this guy, plug and play this guy. I kind of like your approach to it, Brandon. I mean, by now, if you've been in college football for 3 years, especially in the past happy Pac-12, you might want to see some stats. You might need to see some stats because that shows, A, you're productive, B, that you're productive enough to get on the field and get the reps to generate those stats. So that's the thing everybody's looking about there. Is it the portal going to help here? I still think the tight end market might be the best place for Georgia Georgia in the portal at this time. But, you know, graduate transfers, Brandon, and a lot of these guys, we said this already on your program here, that this portal is going to be active after spring practice.
Yeah.
It's going to be active in the summer. It's going to be active not for the 2019 season, but it's going to be active after everybody's seen their three or four games of action or non-action when they're in their college fits. And as we've seen before, the portal is now active for someone who's been on campus for 17 days, for the likes of the gentleman named Rue McCoy, going most likely now from USC to Texas.
Yeah, I think you're bringing up an interesting idea just on the subject of, you know, kind of the way you evaluate guys once they get into the transfer portal. Because I will tell you, when it comes to Josh Amatrebebe, that's a guy that I did see play a lot in high school. And as a high school senior, Jeff, I really liked him a lot. That's a very talented looking athlete. He certainly got the perfect seeming, you know, frame as a wide receiver. I would have loved to have seen Georgia get him initially. But as you said, when Amatrebebe, who is in the transfer portal now, when he goes out to USC and does get on the field, doesn't produce stats, I'm only forced to assume something is wrong. So as a person that really wants to see Georgia add to its wide receiver mix, as you know by now, I've been very clear on this, obviously George Pickens would be my highest ranked target there. But then below that, if I can't get Pickens, the five-star, who I think is just a special athlete, I'm probably going to choose a guy like Cager, who's at least put up numbers at the college level, over a guy like Amatrebebe, who's probably a better athlete who hasn't really put up those numbers, or another, you know, four-star-ish wide receiver that Georgia might be able to get as a high school senior right now, who may or may not pan out. One way or another, you know, Cager is a little bit of a finished product. So to me, that's a safer bet on a more short-term play. I'm not saying Georgia, you know, will get him or even feels the same way about this that I do. But if you're asking me for my sort of ranking order of preferences, I'm going to take, you know, elite five-star athlete first, and then, you know, below that, I'm probably going to take somewhat proven commodity, even if he's not quite the same level of dazzling athlete as some of the other guys that are out there.
It's kind of weird, Brandon. I notice what it's feeling like to me is a subculture of recruiting kind of coming up here. And what I mean by that is, you've got a guy, he could sit there and you would go, okay, do I want to plug in the 18-year-old high school kid or maybe the 20- or 21-year-old third-year guy coming out of college? And then really you have a half scholarship where you're only talking about one or two more years on the hook with that guy, where you get a 21-, 22-year-old guy in college rather than an 18-, 19-year-old guy in college who's systematically going to have to learn a great many things about college football in general. So it's very interesting how you start thinking about, okay, that guy's only going to be on the scholarship tab for 2 years, and he's going to be 21 and 22, or maybe this kid for 3 or 4 years. You know, that's the same comparison that exists there with the gentleman out of Tennessee, Wolf, or, you know, the same head-to-head thing where you would look at Brett Seifert there as well. Different ways to look at this stuff now, no doubt about that.
Well, I will say, too, it's one of the reasons why, and, you know, Jeff, on our show, one of the topics that comes up from time to time is Demetrius Robertson. And, Jeff, I'm not soured on Robertson. I'm not selling my stock in Robertson, you know, euphemistically speaking. I still believe that Robertson has a major chance to be a major contributor, assuming that he's, you know, still on this roster for Georgia in 2019. I think he still has a chance to be a major contributor, and I'm basing almost all of that on the fact that he was, at one point in time, a good college player. He was a freshman All-American at Cal in 2016, had nearly 800 yards receiving. If he's got that on his resume, even in a league that generates a lot of passing offense, I just think that gives him a chance to be a contributor. I would feel the same way about a transfer that Georgia might be able to bring in right now. If you've done it before, there's a chance you could do it again. If you've been on a college roster and you haven't done it before, I'm going to assume there might be a reason for that.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it, Brandon, because it means other guys are beating you out for playing time. The thing you don't know about in Amatrebebe, for instance, is that some of those guys are still going to be there. They're guys that are younger than him that have came in and played above him. You see guys like Felix Jones. You see guys like last year Amon Ross St. Brown at USC, who caught 60 balls. Well, in the D-Rob's case is a great example, because now you sit there and you go, well, what's the reason why he wasn't generating those stats? Wasn't his name in the lineup more? Why wasn't his number being called? And NFL seems to think, or they've led Mecole Hardman and Riley really did think that those guys have bona fide futures in the NFL. So there you have it. Maybe the reason why D-Rob wasn't playing is he was stacked in at the same position. Let's throw Terry Godwin in there as well. Three future NFL guys right there that kind of carried the load for Georgia while Demetrius Robertson was waiting his time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Hey, one more thing on this particular subject before we talk about a couple different things before I let you go. You mentioned Mike Griffith's really good report about Eli Wolf, the former Tennessee tight end, and his, you know, potential Georgia interest. If I'm Georgia, what I really feel like I need right now is that tight end opposite Charlie Warner to line up in those two tight end sets. You know, given what I think I know about Eli Wolf, I guess I'd have some questions about whether or not he is that guy. You know, I know you haven't obviously broken down a whole bunch of film on Eli Wolf, but would you have some reservations that he could be that second tight end for Georgia? I don't mean number two tight end as a backup. I mean second tight end, and what Georgia presumably is still going to do a good bit of is those two tight end sets. From a schematic standpoint, do you think Wolf could potentially fit that role for Georgia?
Well, you got to think, A, how well does he block? How well is he putting his hand in the ground and moving the pile and, you know, paving the way for running back you that we keep hearing all about now at Super Bowl Media Day regarding the Bulldogs? The thing, I'll say two things. One, I really think John Fitzpatrick has the chance to be the biggest target with his softest hands that Jake Fromm has ever enjoyed so far during his time at Georgia. And I know maybe Javon Wims is clearly that guy right now, but when you look at Wolf, let's go back to the stats thing, Brandon. Let's not talk out of both sides of our mouth. Five catches for 30 yards last year at Tennessee. And, you know, folks can say, oh, offensive coordinator needed a new direction. Tennessee was developing. But, I mean, that's the type of that's not the type of stats you want an impact transfer tight end to have coming into the program. So, you know, I like Fitzpatrick a lot because of his size and his height, and Charlie Warner is going to be a four-year player in the SEC, and those guys, by the time they reach their fourth season, and they're very physically developed and athletic in the way that Charlie Warner is, that's usually calls for a big year when you're the most senior man on the totem pole or on the field, so to speak, being covered by 19- and 20-year-old safeties. I think good things can happen for Charlie Warner, and let's not forget, I think everybody remembers Rylan Godey here, who is on campus already, coming back from a late October knee injury at Kennesaw Mountain. You know, I kind of think with that one, he might be ready to go July or August, and let's call it what it is. It's not going to be ready to go for a featured role in the Georgia offense and catch seven balls in the Notre Dame game. It's a role to provide depth, and reps and, you know, be part of those big packages for Georgia. And I was having this conversation with another beat writer yesterday when people were talking about what's Georgia going to do with tight end if Scyther doesn't happen or Wolf doesn't happen. I'll tell you exactly what Georgia's going to do, and it's what they did last season, and it's what we've already talked about on the Dog Nation Forum. Is they're going to put a number 42 on somebody, one of those big tackles, like they did with Justin Schaefer last year, like they did with Cade Mays in his first year. And that's going to be your tight end necessary in all those A sets, those goal line sets, and those jumbo sets for Georgia. They'll get that tight end into the game. Don't worry about that.
It is our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff Sintel on Dog Nation Daily. If you want to find out about big events and special offers happening at the Marlowe's Tavern in your neighborhood, simply become a Marlowe's insider by texting the word Marlowe's. That's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, no apostrophe, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242, and you can become a Marlowe's Tavern insider today. It's a great a way to get in touch with everything going on at the Marlowe's Tavern right there in your neighborhood. All right, Jeff, a couple other issues quickly before we let you go today. You foreshadowed this for us a bit on Friday, and over the weekend it indeed came to pass. Georgia hosted a lot of top 2020 and 2021 running backs as it looks to extend its branding here as Running Back University. And yet, one of the things that a lot of my audience seemed to notice, and I'll admit I noticed too, is Zachary Evans, one of those names, ended up deleting a bunch of tweets from his time in Athens. Now, this is, you know, likely nothing, but what did you make of the fact that Evans was on campus, tweeted out some happiness about it, and then eventually deleted those tweets actually pretty quickly after leaving the Athens campus? Is this something or nothing?
Well, I'm going to speak generally about this situation here, Brandon. Sometimes it is no longer cool to tweet out pictures of visits. It's the topic that, you know, some guys don't want to put themselves out there. Some guys don't want to show everybody else what they're thinking. And then other guys kind of think now that that's a little too haughty. Maybe you see that phrase sometimes around social media that gangsters move in silence. No, let's not call college football gangsters at all here. But just guys that are very tough-minded men don't need to put all their business out there on social media, much to the chagrin of those who like to follow college football recruiting live and up close with some popcorn off their Twitter feed. Some guys just want to do it differently. Some guys would rather put that stuff on their Snapchat. Some guys would rather put that stuff on their Instagram. I think the thing here, I would encourage your audience to do some homework because I think that's what a lot of Georgia fans are doing right now, is they're sitting there and they're playing those huddle films of Marshawn Lloyd.
Yeah.
They're playing those huddle films of Zachary Evans. They're comparing those to Kendall Milton. Everybody remembers Tank Bigsby from the state of Georgia. Everybody knows DeMarcus Bowman, another top five running back in the country, who just eviscerated the Florida high school state playoffs this year. Then there's another name by the name of Seth McGowan, who also visited Georgia this weekend, who also is a top 10 running back in the country, that also seemed to really enjoy himself with maybe some of those googly eyes towards the University of Georgia program as well. And, you know, you've got McGowan, that's a running back out of Texas. Not a lot of people know about him. He tweets out about an amazing visit to Georgia. And this is the world we live in, Brandon, where Georgia has the number 109 player in the country for 2020. He's 5'11". I think he's about 210 now. Number 10 running back in the country. And on the same visit weekend, my man, Georgia has not one but two higher-rated running backs in the same class visiting Georgia at the same time. Running back U, RBU, is not just a fickle thing to put on a T-shirt or on a tweet or a recruiting poster. It does seem like the nation's elite running backs are thinking heavily about Georgia. And Georgia is always on their mind.
Yeah, that's really a nice thing to think about. Let me finish with this very quickly as part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. And, Jeff, I don't mean to put this so bluntly, but I guess it's important to try to cut to the chase. Based on what you wrote this week about John Rhys Plumlee, reminding us one more time about what the blue shirt scenario is for him, boy, it sure does not sound like John Rhys Plumlee is going to play his college football in Georgia. Am I putting that too bluntly by saying that?
No, I mean, you're one of the few guys in this world that will get me to give a percentage because percentages are so crazy. But I do think we owe our audience a little bit of that. So I just think now, and, you know, the other schools, you know, I didn't want to dig too hard in the batter's box on that story. And I apologize, guys. I did try to write that as concisely as I could. I put bullet points up top, Q&A's up top. It's just a very complicated situation. Folks needed to know what the blue shirt is one more time. Plumlee's been visiting. I think the things to look at here are at least all these cool schools on the surface level are telling John Rhys Plumlee that we see you as a quarterback now. We're recruiting you as a quarterback. And that's kind of what he always wanted to hear in his recruiting. I think that's one of the spokes of the wheel that drove his initial commitment to Georgia. And it's simply this. It's Georgia in a blue shirt versus a traditional scholarship at all these other schools. Now, let's go through them. Auburn seems pretty set, or there's going to be competition there at the quarterback spot. But maybe Georgia's advantage is two of the guys he is competing with are arriving on campus in the same academic or signing class year as well. One of the other things about the blue shirt that's an offshoot of this conversation that I didn't even really dive into is that when you're a blue shirt, you're essentially on campus. You're borrowing against the 2020 scholarship cap, so to speak. But you have you don't really have the promise of playing at all. You're mostly a scout team and a depth guy, and then you can play during the 2020 season. And when you compare all that with Georgia, with the blue shirt at Georgia, nothing has changed with the offer to be a bona fide guy come in and compete at places like Ole Miss and Auburn and Mississippi State, and FSU will be his final official visit on this weekend. Not an easy climb for Georgia here, especially now when Georgia does have three scholarship quarterbacks in the room. They've got a couple of other walk-ons that will be there as well. That gets the number up to five, and might be an issue here where Georgia just simply tries to get by one more year and think about quarterbacks in 2020. The other thing to think about with all this is, as always, what does the 2020 quarterback pool looks like? But Georgia is just trying to maximize every scholarship they can. And that's why this blue shirt stuff matters. And I wanted to write about Plumlee at least one more time close to signing day because I think it is admirable in this day and age how he stayed committed to Georgia for this long of a time because he kind of told me that's just the place he always saw himself at the most, which is a young man that – and when he does decommit from Georgia to potentially move somewhere else, I'd like to make sure our readership knew that he didn't just take this lightly. It was a very measured decision if he chooses to go somewhere else.
Jeff, I appreciate you writing in on that, and I appreciate you weighing in on all the topics today. Obviously, this is a busy time for recruiting as that 2019 cap is about to be put as the lid comes on the 2019 class here, and we'll follow you for all of it, Centel, Intel, and everything else at DogNation.com in the Dog Nation Forum, too, and, of course, tomorrow as Before the Hedges returns as well. So, Jeff, we're looking forward to a lot of recruiting info in the days to come, and we appreciate you staying on top of all of it for us.
Hey, guys, sure appreciate it. I was looking forward to everybody getting out to Marlowe's. We had a special guest on tap, but now it looks like there's just the roads will be impassable. There will be no milk and bread at the stores, and we'll just have to live off Facebook Live for a little bit for in a couple more weeks until this tremendous snowmageddon passes.
That is right, Jeff. We'll look forward to seeing folks at a Marlowe's Tavern again very soon. Thanks for being with us.
Gotcha, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff. As a part of our Marlowe's Tavern, tell all the Jeffs and tell. Don't forget you can become a Marlowe's Insider by texting the word Marlowe's, no apostrophe, just M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. Once again, Marlowe's to 24242. You can find out about big events, special offers, the Marlowe's Tavern right there in your neighborhood, including when Jeff and I and the rest of the Dog Nation crew are going to be back in the Marlowe's Tavern again very soon. I want to say one thing about what Jeff was talking about, and then we'll get on with our SEC through. You know, I'm reminded in the John Rice Plumlee conversation of I came of age back in the era when Dick Vitale was a really big deal. Vitale, the college basketball analyst, he still does games. I don't get the impression he's quite as big a deal now as he was in the late 80s, early 90s when I was growing up. Back then, he was on TV all the time, and his opinion really mattered. And when you got close to March, you know, there's the bubble conversation. There's the discussion of which teams belong in the NCAA tournament. And Vitale, when he would go on the ESPN shows to talk about the bubble teams, he had every team that was on the bubble in the NCAA tournament. And if you're at home doing the math on this, by the time Vitale was through speaking, he had like 114 teams in the NCAA tournament when the field only had room for 64. He just, you know, liked all the teams and wanted to see all the teams in there. I think sometimes with Georgia recruiting, it's the same way. I really like John Rice Plumlee. If you're watching on video, we're watching some of his highlights right now. This is a pretty interesting player in terms of a really athletic profile. I really love the idea of John Rice Plumlee at Georgia. Not just because he's a good player, not just because he has impressive highlights. You know, John came to Athens a lot last year, and I bumped into him a couple times, had a chance to talk to him. He was a pretty impressive young man, too. This is the kind of player that you want at Georgia. But much like Dick Vitale and his issue of having every bubble team in the NCAA tournament, there is a cap on how many players Georgia can take. And I'm really glad that my job is not to decide of those available scholarships who gets one and who doesn't and who needs to be asked to wait. And that, you know, comparison to another offer, which is, hey, come right now, be a scholarship player officially in the 2019 class, that may be more attractive to John Rice Plumlee. I'm really glad I don't have to make the tough decisions that Kirby Smart has to make. If it was up to me, they'd all come to Georgia, and there'd be room for everybody, and Georgia would sign 214 players. But obviously, the rules prohibit that, and in this case, the overall number crunch may hurt Georgia with John Rice Plumlee. It's a disappointment because Plumlee would be a really fun player to have at UGA, and he could actually have a really good career, but this one may just not work out. We appreciate Jeff Sintel's candor on that. Let me also remind you of this. We get ready to transition to our SEC through. The big game is coming up on Sunday, and the best way, I think, to enjoy the game is getting involved with it. You want to be a part of that conversation at your Super Bowl party about, you know, who's got the action down and which side are you on and what your pick is and is it going to be right? And, you know, when you're getting involved with something like this the first time, I think the thing you want to do is trust a sports book that you can know is going to give you that fast, no-hassle payout when you win, especially for this week. Really the biggest gambling week of the year. My friends from MyBookie are the place to go. They're the only ones that Dog Nation recommend because they're the only ones that have that fast, no-hassle payout when you do win. So here's what makes it even better right now. When you use the promo code DOGNATION, that's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G, the promo code DOGNATION with MyBookie, your first deposit can actually be matched up to 50%. But you got to go right now. You got to use the promo code DOGNATION, find MyBookie online, simply type it in, M-Y-B-O-O-K-I-E, and the browser will do the work for you. The internet will get you where you need to go. Then after that, you use the promo code DOGNATION, Your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. And then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. It's all that easy when it comes to MyBookie. A couple of SEC stories to get to. You know, we've obviously focused around here on the Georgia recruiting news and how Georgia's going to close out its 2019 class. But there are a few interesting stories still out there with the rest of the SEC. I saw where there was some online chatter about Chris Vogel, the top 100 player. He's a defensive end, kind of a pass rusher type guy. Currently an Alabama commit. But there's also some thought that Miami and Florida may be sliding in on Vogel. And there's been some kind of Twitter stuff back and forth on that the last couple of days. It's another example where Florida thinks it has a chance to actually flip this player, Vogel, away from Alabama. And in Florida, I think, if I've got the numbers correct, I think they're 11th in the 24/7 composite right now. I believe they've signed 14 four-star players. I may be slightly off on that, but I'm generally correct. This is a Florida program still trying to make some noise before the end of the cycle. Obviously, currently committed to Alabama, but there's some issues there now as that coaching staff is kind of in flux. So Florida, Miami trying to slide in and be a part of the Vogel talk here. This top 100 recruit will follow that. I wanted to mention the Eli Wolf report that Mike Griffith had at Dog Nation yesterday. I loved Mike's reporting on this. I'm glad he brought that to our attention. The fact that Wolf takes the visit to Georgia and potentially interested in UGA. I guess, though, I'm going to find myself saying in the comparison to Wolf, I'd really like to give John Fitzpatrick a shot at that tight end job. And I really think that, based on some of the work that he did last year, I think he's earned his chance to be that guy. I feel the same way about, Ryland Goede and others. I mean, I want there to be a competition. But when I look at Eli Wolf, even though he's been at Tennessee and even though he was, at SEC Media Days, essentially one of the spokesmen for the Vols, I don't know how much that means to me. I don't know that I like Eli Wolf better than the tight ends that Georgia already has. Maybe I shouldn't feel that way. Maybe Eli Wolf's a better player than I realize. But as it stands right now, when you look at his overall, size and numbers, I mean, according to, I'm looking at 24/7 Sports right here, they've got him at 6'4", 236. I need a guy that can come in and block. And from a size standpoint, that's about the same weight that Isaac Nata was a year ago. That's, close to the same weight that John Fitzpatrick was listed at for last year. I need somebody to come in and provide Georgia some beef as a blocking tight end. And I don't know about Eli Wolf being that. Maybe he is. Maybe I should feel differently. But as it stands right now, I guess I'd be a little more excited about the tight ends that Georgia currently has. But obviously, I may grow to feel differently. There's one more story I want to mention. Looks like LSU has made a coaching hire, bringing in Joe Brady, who's worked as a staffer with the New Orleans Saints. He's going to be the passing game coordinator for LSU next season. Obviously, Steve Ensminger remains as offensive coordinator. Brady going to have an impact on the passing game. And I think that idea of LSU increasing its passing game is going to be a crucial story in 2019. It feels like we've been here before with a lot of different stuff with LSU. This is a program that's recruited great at the wide receiver position. It's amazing how the same story duplicates itself with LSU year after year. They've got really good wide receivers, got some talented running backs, and it remains to be seen about the quarterback position. They probably feel better about Joe Burrow than they have any quarterback in quite some time because of what he did do last year, the fact that he returns this year. But for that program to really be a threat to Alabama and what I think of as the rise of Texas A&M and the SEC West, that passing game's got to come into fuller focus. You've got Terrace Marshall, you've got Ja'Marr Chase, you've got an impressive collection of wide receivers. I think the two freshman running backs, Emory and Davis, are going to have really good years. But if they can really develop Joe Burrow into a passing threat as a quarterback, then LSU, I think, has a chance to be actually a little better than maybe some of the experts think for 2019. That may be something worth paying attention to. For now, we'll make that your SEC through. Let me also mention this, before I start getting some questions and comments. We do a video series here at Dog Nation called DN90. I'd love to have you check out today's edition of DN90. It's going to be a little different. DN90 is supposed to be 90 seconds. Today's won't be 90 seconds. But we did have a chance to talk to Mark Barron, the LA Rams defensive back, and a guy that played with Kirby Smart at Alabama when Smart was defensive coordinator there. He had some great things to say about Smart, the same way with Dante Hightower, who was kind of also a part of that conversation. Some really interesting things from both those guys, but their relationship with Smart and the impact that he had on their football careers and what it was like being with him at Alabama before he became the head coach of Georgia. These guys also share some interesting thoughts on the current state of the SEC and the rivalry that seems to be budding between Georgia and Alabama. It's good stuff from two guys know Smart well. We'll do that as part of DN90 today, so I hope you'll check that out. Now, with all that said, one of the things we try to do here on Dog Nation Daily from time to time is get into some comments during the regular portion of the show. And we'll do a lot of this on video a little bit later on. I've actually had a little bit of an issue pulling out my comments on the show thus far today. I've had a little bit of technical stuff with that, with my internet connection here. But I did want to get some reaction to what we heard from Trent Dilfer a little earlier. And it could be we end up having to do some of this on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily or some of the other, you know, places that that comments come, including hopefully on video here in a couple of minutes. I thought that Dilfer's endorsement of the Georgia offense was a really interesting one. I thought him saying, no, I like the Georgia offense. I think it's a good fit. I thought that is the kind of thing, given Dilfer's relationship with other quarterbacks, that ought to give Georgia fans some comfort about what this could look like going into 2019, now with James Coley in full control over that. I also like the candor that Dilfer showed when he talked about what he wants to see more from in Jake Fromm in 2019. Now, Georgia doesn't need Fromm to leave after next season, but you'd love to have him play well enough that that's an option. And what Trent Dilfer kind of identifies is that athleticism. He says, I want to see him be a little more athletic in the pocket. I want to see him work on that a bit more. And I think a to-do list like that from a guy like Dilfer, who knows and respects Jake Fromm, I think is probably a pretty important thing. And as you want to compare your own notes, what you're looking to see more of from Fromm in 2019, those words from Dilfer, I think, work pretty well on that. He also didn't mince words when it comes to the Justin Fields situation, that he saw this playing out the way that it did beforehand. If you missed that from earlier, I'd love to have you go back and check that out. Really good stuff with Trent Dilfer. We'll take more of your comments on this on our video show later on. And if you want to reach out on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, we'll do some of that as well. With that said, though, let's get ready to wrap up today's regular broadcast. And of course, we'll do it the way we always do. You know, we try to make a big case around here that good Georgia fans are Gator haters. And, well, you can listen. Gator haters have a lot to be happy about right now, because it has now been 822 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We love doing that for you every day on Dog Nation Daily. And we'll be doing this, we think, for some time to come as Georgia looks to extend its gap between itself and Florida in the SEC East as it dominates its rival. Let me also take a moment to say this. By my count, we now have four instances of 2020 running backs coming up in conversation, and four instances where Jeff Sintel, our recruiting insider, has inserted the name Marshawn Lloyd, the five-star from Maryland. I'm starting to think that Jeff really likes Lloyd and potentially sees a connection between Georgia and Lloyd. We'll talk to him more about that later, and see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.